isn't everything, he wouldn't know. He's never lost. Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports. Now on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Monday, October 20th, 2014. This is Primetime Sports, Canada's most listened to sports talk show, coast to coast on the Sportsnet radio and television networks. I'm Bob McCown. That is Stephen Brunt over there. Donald S. Cherry will join us in a bit. Navel gazing on the Toronto Maple Leafs will begin early this year.
Yeah.
It's never too early to navel gaze on the Toronto Maple Leafs.
No.
And I'm sure Mr. Cherry has lots of viewpoints on the early NHL season, half dozen games in at most. But the World Series will commence finally at some point later this week, I believe tomorrow.
Tomorrow, I think.
Yeah.
It has been a while, though, hasn't it?
My God, yeah. And anything to avoid everything else that's going on in sport in order to try and get the spotlight on yourself. That's what baseball is doing, which is in and of itself kind of a story. But we won't deal with it in depth tonight. It's two teams that don't have a lot of glamour. I hate to say they're starless teams, but they don't have any of those guys that you would watch just because they are in this series. Somebody will jump up and be great, I don't doubt. Somebody will have, you know, there'll be guys that have great World Series. There'll be somebody who will be the MVP who will either pitch like crazy or hit like crazy. Something will happen, but it's really difficult to point a finger at a particular player or small group of players and say, those are the guys you want to watch play. There are two markets that don't exactly capture the imagination nationally, but they're here. It's San Francisco and Kansas City. Rob Nyer of Fox Sports joins us to talk about it. Two teams that came out of divisions that maybe weren't the best, they didn't play the best. Does that diminish the significance of what we're all about to watch, or should it not be relevant, Rob?
Well, I think that sort of depends on your perspective. If you want every year to see the two best teams in baseball, or two of the very best, you'll be disappointed, at least, you know, intellectually, before the series, you'll be disappointed. I don't believe that, divorced from that context, one would be able to tell the difference between, say, the Royals and one of the better teams in the American League. And there were a number of them this season, no question. But I think your chances of seeing an exciting or well-played series are almost exactly the same right now as they would be with any other couple of teams.
Yeah, because the World Series is going to exist unto itself. But I guess the thing is, Rob, and maybe it was an inevitability once you added that. Well, it was an inevitability once you added the second wild card and you made the pool that much deeper. This, you know, potentially you have the worst World Series matchup in history here, don't you? These could be the two worst teams ever to meet in terms of what they did during the 162 game season. The worst two teams to ever meet for the World Series.
I think that's true. I actually wrote something about this morning in my column, and I think that's fair. I think the only real competition that I've been able to spot was maybe during World War II, the last 2 years of the war, 44 and 45. So many of the teams, all the teams really lost so many of their players to the service that, for example, in 1944, the Cardinals and the St. Louis Browns faced off, and they had a lot of players who weren't in the majors 2 years later when everybody came back from the war.
But they were still the best two teams. Yeah, they were.
Relative to their competition, they were two of the best teams. Absolutely. If we're talking just about relative to their immediate competition, these probably are the. We've had teams in the World Series before who scored objectively, who were worse statistically, analytically, than these teams. I don't believe we've ever had two in the same year at this level. So I think that's fair. I think it is fair to say that. For me, it doesn't diminish the interest level much, maybe a little bit. Look, I would like to see most years, I would like to see the best teams in the World Series. I think that would make that makes there is something to be said for having the marquee teams in there. But by the same token, I don't want to see that every year, because if that happened, you know, we watch sports because in part we like to be surprised. And if it were just every year the two best teams in the World Series, it wouldn't be a surprise. We need these series every once in a while just to remind us that nothing's a sure thing.
But this is layered on, I would say. It is two markets that don't exactly capture national attention on a regular basis. Not that San Francisco's an insignificant market, or Kansas City for that matter, but it ain't New York, Chicago, L.A., Boston, et cetera, et cetera. There's a dearth of superstars on these rosters, guys that you would look at under any circumstance. I'm sitting here thinking, you know, if these two teams, and you have two teams that didn't win 90 games to get there, if you had a Los Angeles Dodgers versus New York Yankees matchup with the Dodgers and the Yankees coming, you know, neither one had stars in that particular year, international stars, if you will. Neither one of them won 90 games. I still think the interest level would be significantly higher. There's a whole bunch of things that pile onto one another that kind of, unless you are a real diehard baseball fan, it doesn't exactly draw you in, does it?
Well, again, I think that's fair. I do think, too, though, that there are other things that create interest aside from just having marquee teams or players. Those things certainly help. But, you know, back in 1985, the last time the Royals were in the World Series, they played the Cardinals, two Midwestern teams, two of the smallest markets in the majors. And that series was quite well received by the public. Didn't do tremendously well in the television ratings in the States, but did quite well. Now, there were some differences. The Royals at that time had George Brett. The Cardinals had Ozzie Smith. You know, those were two of the biggest superstars of that time.
That's my point, though.
And you know, the other thing, too, and this is one thing that we, regardless of the teams, we have lost this year. What happens in the postseason, some years anyway, is that the interest for the World Series is built during the previous series. And in 85, for example, the Royals and the Blue Jays played in the ALCS. That went seven games, quite exciting. The Cardinals and the Dodgers played in the NLCS. There were some dramatic moments in that series. And that did help build up the interest for the World Series. And, of course, as exciting as so many of the games have been in the postseason this year, it's also true that the series were short. And you know, when you got 5 days off after the LCS until the World Series, certainly some of the interest is going to disappear. Not all of it by any means, but the only thing that could have, I think, leaving aside the teams, one thing that could have worked out better is the previous series could have gone longer and helped keep that interest going.
But I think you're right, Rob, that you know, people aren't going to look at Kansas City in the World Series and think of the team that played 162 games. They're going to think of the team that's won 8 games in the postseason in a row, you know, squeaked through the wild card game and then has rolled everybody else in their path, right? That's kind of the context for Kansas City coming into the series.
Yeah, there are a lot of people around the country talking about the Royals now because of the way that they've gotten to this point. So there's also that, and I think there's, you know, we talk about the Yankees and the Dodgers and how much interest there would be. Well, that is true. There would be a great deal of interest, but there are people in a vast swath of the continent who don't want to see the Yankees and the Dodgers in the World Series because they're just tired of those markets and seeing them dominate the media. And I suspect there will be people in Iowa and Nebraska and Minnesota and other places who will watch who wouldn't have otherwise.
Oh, I'm pretty sure that's true, but it doesn't mean the total numbers will be the same.
That's right.
Is this condemnation of the wild card play-in game in any way, shape, or form?
I don't think so. I mean, the Royals would have won the wild card outright. The Pirates, or I'm sorry, the Giants wouldn't have. Everything else being equal, they would have had to play the Pirates in a play-in game, in another play-in game, actually,
for
the wild card. But it's certainly true that, as you suggested earlier, when we added the extra round, it was inevitable we would have not that we would have a series like this, because that was already inevitable. It was just a matter of time. We'll just have more of these. We might have one of these series every 8 or 10 years rather than every 15 or 20 years. It's going to happen more often. Mm. I would argue that this is a good thing for baseball, and not just because of the increased revenues that you're going to get because you got an extra round of playoffs or whatever, or an extra couple of playoff games. It's good for baseball when you have more teams that reach this point. I mean, this year the Royals have created an entirely new generation of baseball fans that would not have been there before, and that will now be baseball fans for decades. You know, I became a huge baseball fan because I was in Kansas City in the late 70s when the Royals were so good.
Right.
And when you have a market that doesn't do anything exciting for decades on end, as the Royals have, as the Pirates had, as the Orioles had, you lose in who knows how many fans. So getting these teams in the playoffs, at least every once in a while, that is great for baseball's continued popularity around the country.
And you're right about the kind of generational echo effect that's, you know, well, we see that in the market where we are right now, where, you know, they haven't done anything. They haven't won a thing since 93, and there's still an echo of those World Series, although it starts to die out at a certain point, right? So, but if you're a 12-year-old kid in Kansas City right now, you're pretty crazy about baseball, I'm thinking.
12 is, maybe you've seen the same study I have. 12 is almost exactly, that is the age to grab a baseball fan. The peak time for a baseball fan is to create a baseball fan. The peak age is between the ages of 10 and 12, 10 and 13. After that, you start to lose them because of kids develop some other very strong interests, as we all remember.
Yes, but I believe that's true.
Right around 10, 11, 12 years old, if you can get them then, you can get them for life.
Now, prognostication with this, it would seem kind of ridiculous since no one got this one right, like at all. But what do you think this series is going to look like?
Well, it's both teams had enjoyed immensely productive bullpens this season, and for both managers, even more so than usual, it's going to be about trying to get a lead in the sixth inning. And there's not a lot they can do to get that lead. You know, there's so much talk about manufacturing runs and the Royals' speed and the steals and all that neat stuff, but the Royals don't really deploy much of that speed, at least not in an obvious way, until late in the games. But if they're behind late in the games, they're probably not going to win because they don't hit all that well typically, and the Giants have such a good bullpen. So the key is going to be, if you can be ahead 4-2 or something in the sixth or seventh inning, you're probably going to win because the bullpens are so good. And that's true of every series, but even more so, I think, this time around, because, again, these are not real big hitting clubs, and their bullpens have been tremendous.
Do you think, with Rob Nyro of Fox Sports, by the way, do you think baseball is hurting itself by not expediting its postseason, by structuring its postseason to provide breaks, to avoid Monday night, for example, projecting 7-game series and not starting the next series until a predetermined date? Or do you think in this day of television and the revenues that are generated by it, it's a necessity?
I don't think it's a necessity. I think that it is a short-term. It's done for short-term gains. That's what the TV networks want. So they grab the money, and they've done this for a long time now, grab the money when they can get it. And they don't really think about, what it means for 5 or 10 or years down the road. I absolutely think that everybody would be better off in the long term if they played the games as soon as they could, if they had fewer off days. There's
right.
no reason to have so many off days. It also changes, by the way, the structure of the competition. The Royals use their top three relief pitchers, who, again, have been tremendous all year now. Those guys pitched 40%. They pitched 40% of the Royals' innings so far, which, of course, they simply couldn't do in the regular season. It would be too much work.
Right.
But because they have the days off, they can do that. As a fan, I would rather see basically what I would describe as straight baseball, where teams have to essentially play the same game that they play
all year long,
all season.
Right.
You know, use the same relievers, have to use at least 4 starting pitchers, et cetera. But it's always been this way, of course. You know, back in the old days, we all love to talk about how things used to be. Well, it wasn't that long ago. I don't remember it, but it did happen. You would see pitchers routinely start 3 games in a World Series, 1-4-7. That's
yep.
what Bob Gibson did.
If the Royals win this series, Rob, does that mean that Ned Yost is a better manager than everyone thinks he is, or does that mean managers mean less than we think they do?
Maybe both.
Well, you can certainly make an argument for both. I would argue that Ned Yost has been the right manager for this moment. That doesn't mean he'll be the right manager for the next moment. We all remember, I shouldn't say we all remember because I can't remember what year it was, but do you remember the year, whatever year the Rockies played against the Red Sox in the World Series? I believe it was 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And the Rockies, like the Royals, won their first 7 postseason games. Of course, now the Royals won their first 8 because they had the extra game. But the Rockies won a playoff for the wild card, which you could argue is like a postseason game. So
mm-hmm.
they won their 8 postseason games, essentially. And people at that time were saying exactly the same thing about the Rockies that they're saying about the Royals now. This team's come out of nowhere, but they're really this good. Look, they just won 8 games in a row. They have to be this good.
Mm-hmm.
And their manager must be a genius. Well, Clint Hurdle did not manage the Rockies for too many years. After that, the organization quickly soured on him when the Rockies started losing again. Now, of course, he's rehabilitated his reputation with the Pirates, but this perception that Ned Yost is some sort of genius or has turned a corner or become a different manager, that will last exactly as long as the Royals win. And when they don't, he'll be back to what he was before.
There's nothing less relevant in baseball than a manager. It's just, that's the end of that discussion. Let's not even get into it because, managers get hired and get fired and become geniuses and go to the Hall of Fame based upon the quality of the player that they put on the field or that the general manager puts on the field for them.
But this is a whole other thing, Bob. You got a guy who's now 8-0 in the playoffs and people still think he's been lousy even in the playoffs.
I mean, I think he is what he is. I mean, you know, I think managers make mistakes. They lose baseball games. They don't win any. And you know, has this guy been worse than most over the course of the year? Has he lost more games than anybody else? Well, maybe, but his team is still where it is. So ultimately, it's either a reflection of him or it has absolutely nothing to do with him. Mm-hmm. I choose the latter.
I would argue that Ned Yost has not been a good manager generally in his career.
Oh, he might not be.
But I would argue that he has been a good manager over the last couple of weeks, and not just because they're winning, but because he has adapted. He has used his bullpen in a way that he's never used it before. And I don't. This style of managing, again, won't work over the course of 6 months, but it will work. And I'm not saying it's only because it has worked, but using your best relief pitchers when they're that good, getting your starter out of the game in the 5th or the 6th inning because your bullpen is better, that makes a great deal of sense. And some managers wouldn't do that. So I think that Yost deserves a small bit of credit for how well the Royals have played.
Well, yes, this is in hindsight, this all looks good because he's won every game he's made that decision in. And if he'd lost every game that he made that decision in, he would have been fired by now. and so there it goes. I mean, it's still up to the guys you put on the field. The decisions that are made are not that different from manager to manager, from day to day. You adjust a little bit, and in the postseason, you should adjust. You got a handful of games to play. You can't wait for next week because there isn't going to be a next week. I mean, I give Yost credit for managing in the moment. He's trying to run his best horses in the race as long as those horses can keep running.
Well, and you make a good point, I think, which is that it's easier to do the right thing, or a lot easier when it works.
Well, yeah.
You know, Mike Matheny did not manage his bullpen well. He lost confidence in his bullpen, and then he didn't have a plan B. He just sort of muddled around and hoped something would work. And that happened because his plan A wasn't successful.
Right, sure.
And it's hard to say. We can't know what Ned Yost would have done if plan A hadn't worked out. As it happens, it worked brilliantly, and so it sort of fed itself. His relievers did well, so he went to them even more, and they continued to do well. I don't think that anything is likely to happen in the World Series that causes him to stray from plan A, unless, you know, maybe in games one and two, if his great relievers struggle, he'll say, oh, they must be tired, I have to try something else.
Right.
But at this point, he's probably locked in, and that, I think that'll work as long as they have those late inning leads.
Brunt alluded to this earlier, but I don't know how you pick a winner in this series with real, you know, justification, but go ahead. Who do you like?
I think that it really is incredibly even. I looked at some metrics and figured out which of these teams is sort of fundamentally better, and there's really almost no difference. I do think the Royals' bullpen is a little better than the Giants' bullpen. Their benches are basically the same, if not in specifics, in utility. Starting pitching, both teams have decent starting pitching, but not great starting pitching. The Royals can't really match Madison Bumgarner, but otherwise they're just as deep. And neither club hits real well. I do think that the Giants do have better premier hitters. Buster Posey and Pablo Sandoval. The Royals really don't have anybody as good, but the Royals have better defense, especially in the outfield.
Yeah.
So it really is a very even series, and I haven't even tried to pick a winner yet.
Extra innings.
I think the Royals, being the home team, helps a touch, but you know, it's in baseball, it really doesn't matter that much.
Let me condense your opinion then. Mr. Nyer says extra innings, game seven, flip a coin.
A writer's nightmare.
You know, it's funny. I grew up in Kansas City, and it would be fun to see them win again, I guess. But what I really hope for is an exciting series. I'm really looking forward to, you know, a four or five game series would be sort of a letdown at this point.
Thanks a lot for joining us. Enjoy the World Series, Mr. Nyer.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Rob Nyer of Fox Sports. Donald S. Cherry, when we come back and Primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Did Bob McCowan just say what I think he said? You can rewind Primetime Sports Podcast when you subscribe at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. On demand. On demand. On demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Minutes before the hour, that music can only mean one thing. Well, it could mean a few things, but in this case, it means Donald S. Cherry is around.
I absolutely get thrilled, chills when I hear that. And we had it at our grapevine. Remember that to start off with?
Sure, I do.
Beautiful.
Well, I remember that. Did you pick that music?
No, I think my son Tim picked it. And
did he?
A guy named Toms. Remember Toms? Forget his last been that awful. I forget anyhow.
Dave Toms?
I heard you talking about earlier about Yakupov, eh?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, he was minus 33 last year, and you expect him to get anybody going to take him?
No, I don't know. See, I don't think that's very good, though, is it?
not very good.
No.
And every time he does, he gets benched at 33, he calls his agent, and his agent goes out. I think it's only worse than that. I was thinking when Florida took Barkov, or whatever his name was, 2 years ago, he got 8 goals last year. They could have had Seth Jones and Eklund, and they would have been set for the next 15 years. One guy's 6'4", the other guy's 6'6". They'll never learn. They take those Russians in the spec that they'll come through.
Well, so let's get to the core here, because where they've been is history, and you can't undo it. The question now becomes, you're an Edmonton fan, and you've been sitting here waiting for this collection of young kids and high draft choices to mature, to feel their way into the NHL. They've been around a few years now. We're waiting for them to kind of come into their own. But I'm at the point now, Grapes, where I'm saying, I don't think you can wait anymore. I think these guys are what they are. And while they individually, there's a lot of talent there, collectively, it ain't a team that can win. At some point, don't you have to cut bait?
Here's the deal. The goaltenders, they had a picked up Hillier. Take Calgary, for instance. They're outshot, and they win every game. Hillier was there, could have had him for a third-round pick. You're not going to win. They outshot the team the last time. They had 40 shots on them, and they still lose. You don't have a goaltender. I found that out in Colorado. Okay, how good a team you are. I think it's even more important than a pitcher or a quarterback. You don't have a goalie, you don't have a chance, and they don't. I'm sorry to say they don't have a goalie to bail them out once in a while. They've got good forwards. They should add a lot. I've said all along they should add some bigger, and they're all kids. They were like little kids, 18-year-old kids. They're always getting hurt.
Right.
They had to be protected and come along. They had all little guys, all sweet little guys, a beautiful talent in that. No goaltender, a disaster. It was a planned disaster as far as I was concerned. And I was the guy, remember a couple of years ago they were saying, this is the team of the future. This is never going to make the playoffs, and they're not going to make the playoffs this year. And that's too bad with the great fans they've got there.
You know, that's right. Hiller's not going to make Calgary a playoff team, but if they work hard, he's going to give them a chance to win some games, and they're not going to lose heart, right?
You know, but what happens is, you know, you get off there and you're doing pretty good. You're out shooting the team, and all of a sudden the guy lets in a soft goal. You have the bench. You can almost see it sag. By the way, I like that your Hockey Night in Canada, they bitch, they went right along with you how great the Swedes are. That was well done, I must say. I'm going to have an answer for you next Saturday, though.
We asked, you know, there was a lot of, your name came up over there, I got to tell you. There's a couple guys asked us about you over there. You're very famous in Sweden. I'm not sure why, Don. I'm not joking.
Oh, yeah, well, listen, they never did anything to me. I'm just, listen, when they play, and you've got them protected, and you could see the other night when Sedin, he got in an argument with somebody, and Bieska was in there like in a second. They have to, and I know that sounds terrible, but they have to be protected. Now, you remember in Boston when the little Marchand grabbed Sedin and tugged him around like a rag doll, you know it was over then. And listen, that's not their game. Their game is skill. I know Bob would like those guys, lots of skill and stuff like that. They don't fight and everything, but they have to, it's an old story. They have to be protected.
But you got to like this Victor Hedman kid. You know, and it was his, I got to tell you, his dad, his name Ollie Hedman, said that he'd come over here and they gave him the tour of the studio and they let him sit in your chair. And he was thrilled.
Oh, yeah. I got nothing against him. And look at the way he's getting the points in that.
No, he's a terrific player.
Yeah, listen, they have to be protected. I know that sounds awful. You know, Canadian and all that, but everybody knows it. If you let them get knocked around, they're not going to do their job. That's the way it is.
So I don't think I got an answer to the question. Maybe I didn't answer the question. See, you can't even remember the question anymore.
I remember the question. You said,
what would you do in Edmonton? Would you start trading some of these kids?
Absolutely. You're not.
Thank you.
You said that's what you, Yakupov. You can't trade Yakupov because nobody's going to take him.
Well, fine.
Yeah, Eberle or one of those guys have got to go. And it's sad because they're not doing. And Eberle, he'd be as happy as pig in mud. If one of those guys, and Hall, I feel so sad to see Hall out there doing his best. The young kids, they've been there since 18, and batting his head against the wall. They have to do some trades now. Holy smokes. You better make it a good trade, because if you don't, you give one of those kids away, and all of a sudden he gets on a good club and starts scoring 40 goals, it'll be your job. So it's a tough deal giving them away, but something's got to go. Darrell Eakin's not going anywhere. He's got a long contract in that, so something's got to give. hey, they can't keep going the way they're going. They're going into that new building, too.
Yeah, no coaches with a long contract has ever been fired before, I don't think.
Well, yeah, but you know what I mean. They don't have the money.
No, well, yeah, well, I think Daryl Cates is doing okay.
I think he's doing okay, but it's tough going in and telling him, listen, we just hired this guy last year. We'd like to let him go.
I know.
Well, a four-year deal going here.
Because at a certain point, they point at somebody else and say, hang on, what about you? Didn't you hire this guy? Didn't you tell us he was the greatest coach in the world?
Right.
Yeah, that's why we got him. And all of a sudden, he's wrong, and I think there'd be two guys go if they did that.
Yeah.
So you'll be aware of this. There's a goaltender who used to play in New Jersey who was pretty good for a while, but he's a little long in the tooth. Like, if you're Edmonton, are you prepared to pick up the phone and call him?
Like, you might call him, Bob, but you'll never get him. He'll never go there.
He won't, huh?
No, he's hanging around for a real good shot that's got a – and somebody gets some injuries and stuff like that. That's what he's doing because he's not going to go to Edmonton. I mean, I hate to say this about Canadian teams, and they're doing pretty good now. I mean, Montreal 5-1, Ottawa 4-1. We're doing, you know, Vancouver and that. But
early days.
No free agent is going to come if any good's going to come to Canada. The taxes and – the whole deal, and he would never go. Martin would never go.
You went on a rant on, I think, your debut show on Rogers NHL Hockey Night in Canada.
No, it was Hockey Night in Canada, yeah.
Whatever they call it, you know.
Whatever.
I can't keep it straight.
I mean, neither.
So,
I hope they're treating you okay, Don. That's what I'm, you know, I just make sure.
I never see anybody. I go in, they make me look good, and I go in, I got my own little... coach's corner. I never see the other guys on the other side, the big studio and that, and they treat me pretty good. They just let me go.
Good.
Nobody's told me what to do so far. Not that it'll do any good, but they've left me alone. I'm just sort of left alone there, and Ron drops in from his hometown hockey once in a while, and we do our little thing.
So did you or did you not go on a rant about the Toronto Maple Leafs? And part of the problem here is they don't draft Ontario kids. Did I hear you right?
All right, now let's. Okay, you got to back up a little now. What I said was, when you put a team together, you look at the team that won the Stanley Cup, and you try to be like them as close as you can. That's what I started out at.
Okay.
And if you look at LA, they've won 2 out of 3. Last year, they had 15 Canadians and 8 from Ontario. They had the MVP was Williams just down the road here in Coburg. They had the 2 best young players. By the way, Pearson is playing the GTHL and that there. He's leading all rookies. And Toffoli, we won't say any. That whole line, like I said last week, is the best. Yes, I said that. You cannot win when you draft 3 U.S. college guys. You cannot win with a Sweden Finn and pass on a guy that's 6'3", 230 pounds, mean as all Bearcat, and he's only 3 guys scored 3 more goals. Nick Ritchie, they had a shot at him, came right from here, played in the Marlies and the whole deal, passed on him, and I like the little headlines they had, protect little Willie. Protect little Willie? They sent him back to Sweden over there to protect his life. They wouldn't want to put him in the American League. And you pass on a guy 6'3"? Yes, I said that. You have to have more Canadians on a team. Check the Stanley Cup champions. There are always more Canadians, Boston, Chicago, go down the list. Yes, you cannot win with college, U.S. college guys and Swedes and Finns.
I know what you got against the Swedes and the Finns, but what do you got against the U.S. college guys?
College guys play 35 games a year, boom, and all that stuff and everything. They practice a lot. They do not have the nitty-gritty. If you wanted to go out west 25 hours on the bus, guys in the OHL, it teaches them character. You have to be tough. It's only 35 games. They play more or less than they play in the ice follies down there. They are not the gritty guys like you saw in L.A. and Doughty and guys like that. I go down the list. You cannot win without being Doughty. You're going to say, well, what about Jonathan Toews? Hey, he's an exception. You know what I'm talking about? You got a Canadian guy down there. You cannot win with a team full of U.S. college guys and those other guys I talked about. Now, you can have them once in a while if they're good scorers in that, but check out how many leading scorers there are. Check out the young players coming in, Pearson and that. What I say is the truth. And guys, and another thing, too, why not have Canadians here? We're a Canadian team. We're the ones that made Toronto worth $1.4 billion dollars, whatever they are. It wasn't people from Moto that made them. It was people from Ontario that did it. We deserve a break. And as everybody knows, I had the Boston Bruins. We'd play in the night before. We had mostly the guys from Ontario. We'd play in the night before in Buffalo. I could hardly keep their mind on the game. They could hardly wait to get to Toronto. And Brian Burke said it on Ron McLean. He said, everybody knows when guys from Ontario and other teams come in here, they play 10 times harder. And so I say, why not get the guys that play 10 times harder here playing for us? That's the way I feel about it. And I say yes, I cheer for Toronto.
So just as a point of clarity here,
yes,
is your point of preference Ontario kids over other Canadian kids? Or
No. I just said that.
You referenced Ontario, but what you really meant is you want kids that come through the OHL system. Or the CHL system.
And even Quebec in that.
CHL,
too.
Yeah.
Yeah, CHL, Canadian Hockey League. They play 60-some games. They travel. You have to have character to stay in the game. It's no problem. Listen, that's the way it is. I'm not lying. Take a look at the, as I said, I'm repeating myself, take a look at the Stanley Cup champion. I was ridiculed in the paper last year. Oh, there's Cherry again with his annual thing. Every year he says the same thing. 15 Canadians on the Stanley Cup champion. Yeah. Don't you get it? I hope people get it. That's what it is. We're the best players in the world. Over 52% of them are Canadian in the world. And mostly of them, if you want to go where anybody comes from, Stephen, most of them come from Ontario, more than any other place in the world. And that's why shouldn't we have them instead of L.A., which is on the other side of the world. They get seven guys from the OHL, and we get none.
Ontario would be the most populous hockey place on Earth. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, now, and the GTHL, the biggest in the world, 40,000 kids playing in the GTHL. There's more junior clubs next around the Leaf Toronto than any other place in the world, and these guys don't take one of them, and you're wondering why they're scratching to make the playoffs. It boggles the mind.
Now, Don, if you asked those people who were booing their team off the ice on Friday night and throwing jerseys on the ice,
that's
because
terrible,
they were just
terrible.
But if they were to say, who's the number one problem on this team, they would have pointed to a good Canadian boy, Dion Phaneuf. Is that fair?
Yes, it is fair. There's something about him that really irritates the fans, and I don't know what it is. You know, I've never been able to figure out with him. His first year in Calgary, he was a rookie. He was dynamite. I mean, I had him in the prospect game in Kitchener. We beat Bobby Orr. He was dynamite. He played anybody. He had a great low shot, I remember.
Scored like crazy. Scored like crazy.
Yeah. He had 19 goals, I think it was, and the fans loved him. I don't know I don't know what's happened to him here. I mean, it's all his fault, but it's not all his fault. I mean, it's not all his fault. It's just that he's making that big dough, and he came in here and going to be the captain. And remember, he turned up the music and turned the station and all that. And the people don't like that. And you know, another thing, whoever it is, this PR guy, I think made a big mistake. And I'm not knocking him. He showed 30 pairs of shoes, his big mansion, and all his suits and that. People are funny, eh? When they see stuff like that, whoa, just a minute. And that's exactly what happened. They turned against him, and it's not all his fault, but believe me, it's some of his fault.
Do you think that's ever going to get fixed in Toronto, or is he going to get run out of town the way Larry Murphy did years ago?
They'll never take to him, Stephen. They'll never take to him. And nobody's going to touch that contract now with $7 million and that. And he takes it pretty good, but I don't know. And they had to sign him, I guess, but $7 million for how many years? 6 years or something like that. It's never going to change. And for his sake, I bet he wish he was traded.
Let's switch gears just a little bit for a couple of minutes here. You documented, you know, Calgary's playing well, Vancouver's playing well, Ottawa's off to a shockingly good start.
4-1.
Not so good in Winnipeg and Edmonton. The Toronto Maple Leafs are what they are. But in Montreal, it's taken me a while, I must confess, Grapes, to believe in this team. There was a part of me that thought, oh, there's a little bubble here. They're playing nice, but I don't think they've got the horses ultimately. I'm starting to wonder. I mean, might this be the best team in the East? Are you starting to be a believer in them?
Well, like 5-1, you know about Carey Price. I had him in the prospect game. He won, and I think the world of him in that. But I don't know. I'm I'm not saying I'm going to – I know their form. When they went on the road and they were great and everything, I'm just going to – I'm going to kind of wait a little bit till I start telling them they're the best team and all that. But I kind of in your court a little bit. I want to see some more stuff going on. They won some funny games coming from behind and all that. I want to see a little more. But they could – I don't think they're the best team in the East, but I think they're the best Canadian team, that's for sure.
But they probably – you know, they would have been in the finals last year, I think, if Price didn't get hurt. Don't you think?
Yeah, that was – boy, wouldn't that have been a great finals for us or – man, we would have had great. Yeah, when he got hurt, it was all out over. Give it a try, though. What a gutsy guy, boy! It's funny when I go to the GTHL games tonight. I'm going to see some games. All the goalies, all the young goalies, got his equipment, and they all act. You know how cool he acts. You know how he's always cool, and he gets the puck and he hands the puck. Every one of them want to be Carey Price. He's the hero of all Canadian young goaltenders.
It's like once upon a time they were all leaning on their sticks like Ken Dryden.
Yeah, well, way back then, yeah. But now you know how cool he is. He just does nothing, seems to bother him, and that's all the kids. And they got his equipment too. They don't have those great big shoulder pads. He's got small shoulder pads. It's really, I just love those kids and to see them act like that. And boy, a lot of good young goaltenders coming.
Behave yourself now that you're part of the Rogers Empire. Now,
yeah, I don't quite understand that. I thought Saturday night was hockey night in Canada, but
well, I don't know either.
Steven,
I'm confused.
Explain that to me someday. What's going on?
Yeah, and I got to find those missing 2 minutes for you too, Don. I'm sure they're here somewhere.
Awful. not for me to. I used to, you know, when I started. This is no kidding. I used to own first period was mine. I had 9 to 10 minutes. Then it went to 8 minutes. Then it went to 7 minutes, and now we're down to 6. Is that a sign there's kind of phase out or what?
No, I think they just got to get those Swedish hockey stories on the air, Don.
Well, I'm going to answer you. Don't worry, Saturday night.
I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Toodaloo.
See you, Grapes. There's Donald S.
Oh, that's a hoot. It was funny in Sweden, though.
He's
honestly
blaming you.
Well,
he's not blaming you.
Shoot the messenger, right? That's classic. You always shoot the messenger. I just went over and talked to people.
Did what you were told.
Yeah, but it was funny because, you know, we're in Sweden and we're interviewing guys, and so Hedman's dad and coaches and all these people. And almost every one of them off air would say, so there's Don Cherry. You know, Don Cherry, what's he like? He doesn't like the Swedish hockey players. Is that right? I said, yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
But they just ask. Not mad at him.
No, because, well, they weren't, you know, they're not kind of hot-headed people in general. They're kind of cool, right? The Swedes are kind of cool. But, they didn't, it didn't turn into like a debate or anything, but it was just they wanted to know about him. And I say Hedman's dad was thrilled because they took him on a tour of Hockey Night in Canada. He got to sit in Don Cherry's chair. That was great. But yes, he is well known in Ehrenskjöldsvik and elsewhere in Sweden. As far as I can tell, I'd love to get him over there. And I think that walk him down the main drag. That would be fun.
You never know. My initial reaction was good luck with that. But he might do it.
He might, and you know what? They'd all come up and shake his hand. Everybody said it with a smile on their face. That's what I'll tell you. Everybody who mentioned it wasn't like that horrible Canadian bigot.
Right.
They said that Don Cherry with a big smile on their face.
60 seconds. This Montreal Canadiens thing. I mean, we may address this off and on during the course of the regular season. All right, where are you?
You got to tell me who's going to beat them in the East. Maybe Pittsburgh. Maybe Tampa. Boston looks like they're not the same team. Yeah, you got to make a case for somebody else. But right now, you know, if Carey Price is the best goaltender in the world, they got a shot. And he can be the best goaltender in the world more nights than not.
Yeah. The rest of them, I mean,
PK's having some fun.
I respect what they're doing. I thought 2 years ago was a bit of a blip. I thought last year was a blip for sure. But you can't just keep performing year after year and it not be something. And I'm getting to the point where I'm saying they're pretty good. And they might be the best team in the East, and they might be capable of winning a Stanley Cup. It'd surprise me, but they might be good enough. Our thanks to Don Cherry, Rob Nyer for joining us on the program. Another show for you tomorrow. Good night from Toronto.